Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You ever look at the eyes of Boss Madigan? Those big blue eyes, like flat stones in his head? The eyes of Boss Madigan can see the future, like those all-seeing eyes of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg on the billboard in that novel you wish you were older when you first read it. The all-seeing eyes looking out over the Valley of Ashes. Mike Madigan has all-seeing eyes. They've kept him alive in a dangerous and brutal game for 50 years. He's been around in power for decades, the last of the big city Democratic bosses in America. He sees what the feds did with Commonwealth Edison. He sees the moves that'll be made by his so-called allies. He sees the Valley of Ashes that is Illinois politics, with so many of you leaving for other states, fleeing the taxes and the violence like refugees in the great Illinois Exodus. The feds are coming at Madigan hard now, with their big federal bus inviting all his friends and associates on for a ride. The bus driven by a guy named Rico. Will they get him? And how will the politics play out with the Democratic tribes and their warlords pushing for power, like Yugoslavia after Tito? We'll be talking about all of this with a man who knows how it works, my good friend, Tom Serafin of Serafin & Associates, political commentator, former journalist, political strategist, and so many things of Illinois. Tom knows how campaigns work. He knows how candidates position themselves. He's here to tell us how Madigan will deal with it. And speaking of Illinois, have you noticed that the Illinois exodus is increasing? Just ask yourselves and your friends. In your own circle of people that you know, people are leaving. People are just packing up and they're gone. They were leaving before the Madigan news. They were fleeing him and J.B. Pritzker, Governor Commodius Maximus. And in Chicago, they're fleeing taxes. The school's not opening. The violence. People don't hold news conferences when they go. They vote with their feet. They're gone.
What began as a peaceful protest at Grant Park Friday evening devolved into a very dangerous situation in which mob action deliberately sought to injure officers.
That's not peaceful protest. That's anarchy, and we are going to put that down. We are actively investigating, and we will bring those people to justice.
And what about that violence? The people of leaving Chicago haven't forgotten about the looting and the riots, and the people of the suburbs haven't forgotten. Perhaps many in the media did, or tried to, but they haven't forgotten. They didn't call it peaceful protests on the South Side at 75th and Stony. They didn't call it peaceful protests downtown. When all those stores and all those windows on Michigan Avenue were slammed and smashed and the looters took what they wanted and the police cars burned. And not out in the suburbs. When the looters went out there and the soccer moms with their hate has no home here sign, they wondered whether they should have gotten that gun. Because that's real too. And so is this. That horrific scene the other day at Columbus Statue in Grant Park. Leftist activists trying to pull it down and a handful of Chicago cops trying to stop it. The cops were surrounded, outnumbered, overwhelmed, pelted by frozen water bottles, by heavy fireworks. the privileged white woke walkers and Black Lives Matter activists screaming at them, fighting. It was like the Alamo with Columbus. The easy thing to do is to blame Mary Lori Lightfoot. I know. I know the politics too. Her relationship with police is battered, torn, and she's helped batter and tear that relationship. But she needs them, and the city needs them. The city needs the cops. And what about the other people that aren't mentioned? Not the police union boss, not Lori Lightfoot, but the other people that are involved. What about Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox? You know, Jesse Smollett's friend, who sent out her memo saying she won't prosecute protesters. What kind of message does that give police? These weren't protesters, not at the Columbus statue. They were rioters. They were violent. And what kind of message does Kim Fox send? And her political boss, Tony Preckwinkle, chairman of the Cook County Democrats, and their helper, compliant and perhaps spineless Judge Tim Evans. The three of them have been busy emptying the jails, putting the violent back out on the streets with low or no bond, or on electronic home monitoring that isn't monitored. So the rapists, the murderers, the shooters, the assaulters walk around and savage their own neighborhoods. And you know whose neighborhood they're not savaging? Kim Fox's neighborhood, or Tony Preckwinkle's, or Tim Evans. And you know what? Something about politicians, they're all so liberal when it comes to you and your neighbors and your family. But when it comes to them, they have private security. They have cops. They have the force of law to protect them. And you, well, you know, you can just wave goodbye. Why aren't Fox, Evans, and Preckwinkle, most of all, not getting enough credit? They're the ones who are responsible. They're the ones releasing these violent people. They're the ones who aren't putting protesters and looters in jail unless, as Kim Fox said in her memo, the police have, you know, perfect body cam video showing crimes in progress. It's not a perfect world, Kim. It doesn't work that way all the time. And the people of Chicago and Illinois know it, and they leave the Valley of Ashes for Wisconsin, Tennessee, Indiana, Iowa, and elsewhere. Jeff Carlin is always here. He's the co-host here and my friend, owner of Cats, about to be married, and executive producer of The Rokan Show on WGN Radio. And me? I'm John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and a member of its editorial board. And how about you? You're between Kim Fox and Mike Madigan. You're seeing Illinois after Tito. You're thinking about Illinois as it once was, but you're also thinking of the Valley of the Ashes that it's becoming. And you're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Well, as promised, we're sitting here in Illinois, the Valley of the Ashes. And joining us on the Chicago Way is Tom Serafin, my very good friend, former journalist, political consultant, boss of Serafin and Associates Consulting. And also, Tom, you have your own podcast, don't you?
Yes, I do. You know, I called the crisis cast. We started it after, you know, all the situations happened, you know, in February, March. Lisa Druss and myself, Todd Manley is the producer, formerly with WGN, really great with putting things together. And, you know, all I do is interview people with Lisa, but Todd actually does all the work behind the scenes.
Kind of like Jeff.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly. You know, we got some great, great people making it happen for us. That includes Jeff, obviously.
Where do people find that podcast?
You can go to Apple, and you know, most of the podcast sites have it on, and it's called the Crisis Cast. And thank you for the plug. I think this is my first official plug. We actually finished the first season. We've done 30 shows, unbelievably, but it moves fast. You know, every Thursday we put another one up.
That's good to have that consistent day. And if you like what you're listening to here, guys, boys and girls, remember, go to iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find a great podcast, and look for the Chicago Way. And if it's on iTunes and you write us a kick-ass review, I think we average 4.9, right, Jeff? We'll have to treat you all to a Madigan Way deal with ComEd, maybe get you a no-show job at ComEd or something if we can arrange that. What do you think, Jeff? Can we do that ethically? I don't know. So Tom, I've been talking to some friends of mine just before we did the podcast. I was on with Dan Proft, and you were doing your Channel 32 gig. Is it 32 now or Fox Chicago, whatever they call it?
Fox Chicago, right.
Fox Chicago. And Proft was all on me saying all this doom and gloom about Madigan, and what's the result? It'll be, he thinks, some lefties will take over, but we'll still have the same kind of politics here in Illinois. And the Republican handmaidens of the Democratic Party will just continue to squawk. What is going to happen?
Well, you know, I know as much as you do, probably less, but my vision down the road is, you know, the Speaker, Mike Madigan, has been around for a very long time. He was elected in 69 to the Constitutional Convention, you know, helped put this Constitution together. And then he was elected to the House of Representatives and became Mayor Daley's guy and been through a lot and helped put this whole operation together and sustained it all, except for 2 years in the 90s when Lee Daniels took over the House leadership for 2 years. I think it was 94 to 96. During the contract with America when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House in Washington, D.C. So he's seen it all and done it all. And if you talk to all the people that have been watching him, reporters and political scientists, et cetera, he always moves right to the edge, but he never goes over the edge. And he always has so many people working with him and for him that he's never had to do anything publicly that would look in a way that it could be legally wrong. So, you know, if they had the goods on him, they would have indicted him. But they indicted ComEd, and ComEd says they bribed someone. So if they said they bribed someone and they have 3 years to prove it with the federal government, there's going to be some scalps that the federal government is going to get, whether it's, you know, Mike Madigan or somebody else. They're out there hunting and they're looking for everything. And you saw the subpoena that was served on the Speaker's office that mentions AT&T, Rush Hospitals, Walgreens. You know, this might be just the tip of the iceberg. If ComEd and all those lobbyists that they had, a couple dozen or more lobbyists, contract lobbyists, and then, you know, all the people that from ComEd's home office that work Springfield all the time. There's a lot of information there. There's a when the district attorney, the state's U.S. attorney says it's vibrant. He really means it's vibrant. So, you know, but if you take a look at 65, Paul Powell, the Democrat, was elected Speaker with Republican votes. In 75, when Mike Madigan was the assistant majority leader, Jerry Shea was running the floor. They left Clyde Schoen, a downstate Medal of Honor winner. And they went with eight Republicans led by Lee Daniels, who elected the Democratic Speaker from Bensenville, Bill Redmond. So Republicans have been in play when things are close. And if Mike Madigan is not there in the next speakership election, everybody be looking for a team to line up with. I don't know if there's anybody out there who can put a majority together. So I think every vote, when you talk about the combine, something that John Cass, you know, put together a long time ago using that term, it really is this time around. It could be anybody based on the fact that people will try to work together and put their best allies together. But you're right. It is a progressive House of Representatives. And, you know, the Me Too incident of incidents of 2 years ago was a real dent into the Mike Madigan operation. And I don't think the progressives are going to run for election in November, suggesting to everybody that they're going to be willing to vote for Mike Madigan for speakership again. So they're going to be asked by all the Republicans, who are you going to vote for speaker? This guy who's being looked at by the feds or someone new? I think they're going to hold their powder and you know, they're going to probably, you know, make it very difficult for Mike Madigan to get reelected. All those monies that he's distributed to all those legislators, all the Democrats, everybody will have to be talking about what are they going to do with those dollars? Are they return them or are they going to use them? Either going to be with Mike Madigan or they're not going to be with Mike Madigan. How much backbone do these legislators have? You know, in the old days, guys would stick with each other until, you know, it was the end of the line. I'm surprised at how quickly some people were jumping ship. You know, if it hadn't been for Mike Madigan, the situation in Springfield 2 years ago when the governor had a remarkable legislative session would have never happened. It was Mike Madigan that made that work.
You know, I noticed that when the news hit, you know, about Madigan, and to recap, Commonwealth Edison is basically pled guilty to a bribery scheme involving contracts, involving bribes, et cetera, with public official A, who is identified in the federal documents as the Speaker of the House. And all that is going to trigger off a bunch of dominoes. But one that I noticed, speaking to your point about progressive politics coming after Madigan, is that to give the statement, at least to the Tribune, I think, or the Sun-Times too, the statement of, you know, that he's okay, there's nothing wrong, there's nothing to see here, came from, not from Steve Brown, who is Mike Madigan's longtime marionette master of the press down in Springfield, but it came from Maura Posley, his spokesman, his other spokeswoman. And I thought that was interesting that you'd put a female out in front, you know, to give that message. That speaks to me of some kind of concern on behalf of to the Me Too issue, right?
Right, and I think since 18, they've been doing more and more of that, which makes a lot of sense. Obviously, you know, if there's a situation like that, and you know, he had to move his chief of staff and other issues inside that office, he decided, hey, I'm going to have to do something. And certainly, you know, you dress up the situation and you put a woman out front, and she's competent.
And she's
been around, and she understands, and she comes from a family of people that have been watching this thing for a long time. So she's not going to jump over the cliff for anyone. So it's interesting to listen to the language and how they position themselves. Everybody in this kind of situation, you know, when I did some work for Dan Rostenkowski for five of his elections. And, you know, when he was indicted, there was a young prosecutor in the early 90s that was trying to make a name for himself, Eric Holder. And he got hold of $3 or $4 million, and he pursued the congressman. Times had changed. Congressman didn't change with the times. $17,000 worth of stamps. He eventually went up and did 18 months of the farm. My advice to him was, hey, they're looking for your title. They're looking for your office. You know, people that are calling for his resignation are wrong. The speaker should not resign. If I was working for him, I would certainly say, don't resign. I mean, you know, you have leverage now and you can fight. You can make a good deal. I mean, there's a lot of options that he has if he finds himself in a corner somewhere. So, I certainly think this is a long road yet, and to suggest his demise is is, I don't remember the famous quote, but it's not right now. I think Mark Twain, when they they printed his obituary, said, they, you remember that quote? You know,
yeah, I do. I also remember that the Tribune Tribune did print the obituary of Vito Marzullo before he died.
Yeah.
And we had to say, it wasn't me. It wasn't me. Yeah. But we had to say, I know who it was. She was a very good reporter, but it wasn't me.
You know, anyway, most of the wise guys, not wise guys, small W,
I don't, people maybe, have been around
Springfield for a long time, have watched him. Guys like Mike Lawrence, who was the Jim Eggers press secretary before that, legislative correspondent for lead newspapers, and Charlie Wheeler, who was the Sun-Times. And I've seen quotes from them all giving, you know, Mike Madigan credit for taking it up to the line, but never crossing it. So, you know, finding a spot where he's crossed it is the job now of the U.S. attorney and ComEd trying to point fingers. I don't know if that's the case, but that's what they're going to try to do over the next 3 years. But my goodness, there's a lot of need in Illinois over the next 3 years.
Actually, he took it. The problem with those great colleagues of ours is that they don't, you know, see the, unfortunately, the forest for the trees. Madigan took it past the line. The moment he became speaker and started electing not only members of the Supreme Court, but also the Cook County Assessor's Office, while at the same time, he was partners in the famous property tax reduction firm of Madigan and Getzendatter. And to me, that crosses the line right there. I mean, you wouldn't do it if you were like a PTA parent. You would, you know, Tom Serafin, president of the PTA, and say I was his brother-in-law, he would not give me the landscape contract. You wouldn't want to. You wouldn't want to be seen as that kind of guy. But the message went out to all the major Republican donors and the owners of real estate downtown. Who do you go to when Madigan's assessor raises your taxes? Who do you go to reduce the taxes? And that's Mike Madigan. So that was the line crossed right there to me. I don't know.
Right, and then there are other people that are, that's correct. There are other people that would suggest was, I think it was 1998. I could be wrong on that date when he became Democratic Party chairman and was responsible for all the resources and all the individuals getting elected around the state on the Democratic ticket, which means everybody of any consequence in Illinois and Chicago, everyone. I mean, his reach is everywhere. And you mentioned the courts, certainly there, but at every level of government, the Department of Transportation, you know, which is, you know, a recipient of all those revenues from the gas tax and from the federal government and this transportation bill that's on the horizon. So
how you doing?
Yeah.
How you doing?
How you doing?
The boys who pour asphalt and concrete don't like to say, you don't want to say no to them ever, which is why we have, you know, they like you to say si, signore, si.
I believe it's pronounced asphalt, by the way.
Asphalt today?
Asphalt. And 1997 is the date when Madigan took speakership.
Oh, I wasn't that far off.
And, yeah. And I got to ask you, I mean, what happens if, just to say troubleshooting or move past this happening, if Madigan is not in the position he's in, this state's already so shaky. I mean, what happens without that power structure in place? That terrifies me.
Well, you know, that he is the ballast, so to speak. You've got an increasingly very strongly progressive House of Representatives. You have the governor who wants to be the most progressive governor in the world through his own lips. And you have Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who is trying to get planted as mayor and find her sales, so to speak. She becomes stronger from my vantage point, not because of anything she did, but because of the speaker has lost some of his perceived political clout. She becomes stronger. She's got a group of votes in Springfield. Everybody's, you know, not everyone, but there's certain leaders that have, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 to 15, maybe individuals that would coalesce around each other. Not enough people left downstate as Democrats. Certainly they have a large contingent in the suburbs. And of course, the city has that particular contingent. So the governor, you know, got involved in the race for the president of the Illinois Senate, and he supported a candidate that was not successful. And Senator Harmon from Oak Park was successful. Very good organizationally, well-liked, pretty well-financed, but he's always been very strong in organization. So he learned from Phil Rock and others out there who was a former Democratic Senate president. So he was well-organized. He surprised a lot of people by defeating that urban group that the governor was pushing. So I think, you know, when you're looking for balance, you know, there's going to have to be a lot of people at the table. And I don't know if the governor is going to rush too quickly if they're looking for a new speaker too quickly before he gets a good sense of what's going to happen. A lot of the members of the Senate were not pleased that they thought he was kind of meddling. Obviously, it's up to the governor to do what he wants to do. He's the governor. He can do anything he wants to do. But the House is going to be a Donnybrook, you know. I covered that race in 75 with Clyde Schoten and Jerry Shane, Jack Toohey getting back and on the phone. They would walk back to the back chambers, get on the phone with Mayor Daley, and they would talk about, you know, the 50th ballot, the 60th ballot, the 70th ballot, the 80th ballot. Clyde Schoten had 17, 20 votes, and they went back and forth. They needed 89, and the Medal of Honor winner, Clyde Schoten from Anna, Illinois, way southern Illinois, was taken out by a deal with the Chicago Democrats, the state party, and the Republicans. Lee Daniels got up and made that speech on the House floor. Seven of his colleagues followed. They got 89 votes, and Bill Redden became the speaker. A few years later, you know, not too far off, Mike Madigan became the majority leader and then the speaker. So
say what you want about, yeah, go on. I'm sorry.
These are the times when you're going to see who has got roots, who's got real roots. And those people are going to be the ones that are going to be trying to solve the issues that Jeff talked about. We're economically dead. And then you have tax referendum. The progressive income tax that's on the ballot needs 60% of the votes. And we get Mike Madigan, the party chair, and he's listening to the criticism of others out there. Should he be pursuing this with whatever troops he has left, or should he be looking out for himself and his own future? And how will other people be doing it? Will they be campaigning for tax increases or a tax increase on only the wealthy today?
Well, that's nonsense.
Right.
I mean, not your statement is not nonsense, but you said today.
Right.
Because Pritzker threw Madigan under the bus within hours, even though he's got his own toilet issue. This is the hypocrisy of Governor, what do I call him? Commodius Maximus, Governor Maximus. And I don't think Madigan appreciates that. Will he risk whatever capital he's got left trying to save Pritzker's tax increase? That Pritzker's committed to spending $50 million of his own money on ads to push it.
The speaker's number one concern at age of 78, as far as I'm concerned, if he asked me, would be to take care of himself and his legacy and how he moves forward. Regarding the governor, you know, I had talked to a legislator on Saturday morning, and he called it toilet gate. So there's a lot of that conversation going on, there's not a lot of, you know, evidence of wrongdoing. So, but the problem is you have that cloud out there, and you have this ethical issue that the Republicans are going to make, you know, Jim Durkin, the Republican leader on the floor of the House of Representatives, been complaining for some time that nobody wanted to talk about ethics in Springfield the last 2 years. Nobody wanted to do this. Nobody wanted to get at these issues. And today, the only issue is the compromise of integrity in Springfield. And how are you going to pass anything? And will the public say, all these people that seem to be under some kind of spotlight with the United States Attorney's Office is asking me to vote for a referendum that's going to give everybody in Springfield for the rest of my life the opportunity to raise taxes at their own discretion? It's going to be a tough sell. And it gives the business community and the anti-referendum people, you know, it gives them a tremendous issue at the right time as they go into the fall.
Well, I'm anti-referendum because you want to take rich people and boil them in oil for, you know, get some fat out of it for our sandwiches? Yes. But you know what? That's not what this is about, as you point out. This is about unlocking the gate so that politicians in Illinois can drop the level down to where they really want it, which is everyone making $50,000 or more. And that's what they want to increase. That's where the money is. That's where the people are until they go to Indiana or to Wisconsin or wherever they're fleeing to. And that's going to happen. I mean, you've got to be a chump alone not to know that's going to happen.
Right. I worry about Illinois, obviously, is my home state where I do business and where I raised my family and got my kids educated. I'm very proud of a lot of things about Illinois. But financially, economically, if, you know, just the way I look at my own pocketbook and my company's pocketbooks, you know, in this time of recession, the pandemic, civil disorder on the streets, all the concerns about, you know, equal rights for everybody and the opportunity to speak the issues and the disorder, you know, it just is a difficult place to stay. Economically, just a very difficult place to stay. And those numbers are showing that the exodus from Illinois and those people who are leaving because they can. And they're leaving because they need to, which is really unfortunate. Just very unfortunate.
If you put yourself in the, you know, say some family, the young family, our kids are grown now, both yours and mine, your boys and mine. They're grown, they're out of school. But if you're a younger parent, taxpayer, hard worker, earner with children in school, and they're telling you they still don't know when schools are going to open, you can't. And you still don't know about the violence because your wife now is on, you know, 5-0 radio on has that app and listening to the scanners around your, you know, the police scanners and all the shootings that are going on. And you're thinking, you know, do I stay here? I mean, that's the problem. There's a sense of lawlessness and chaos that I don't think bodes well.
Right. There was always, you know, there was always in my history some optimism. There was always some hope, some leadership out there that things could happen, things could change. I grew up for the first 20 years of my life in Milwaukee, in the inner city. And during the riots of the 60s, we were the guard was called out and we were within the cordoned off area. And, you know, we weren't able to go anywhere for a few weeks while people were, you know, riding in the streets, etc. So I have some sense of that. But I remember at the time, there was leadership, there was conversations, there was hope. People were actually making an effort to kind of reach out and touch each other. And you had some leadership nationally and locally that you thought, well, maybe we can get there. Now, there seems to be nobody willing to take that stage and preach the gospel of how you get along with people, the history of our country, the history of the world, and how we got here. Because if you all understand that, then you understand and must appreciate how important it is to keep this democracy going and strong, making sure everybody actually takes part in it. But it's so important because the foundation is there. We just have to build on it and improve it, you know? I don't sense that right now with our leaders.
In the few minutes we have left, and I agree with you, Tom, and Jeff and Tom, I want to ask you a question. With this sense of lawlessness in Chicago that I've talked about, in Cook County. You know, Betty's friends called, texting her, you know, when the looters were out in River Forest and Oak Brook and so forth. That was just beyond belief. With this sense that's going on, I wonder, Lori Lightfoot is taking the heat, and rightfully so, because she's mayor, and she's been fighting with the police. But I wonder why Kim Fox, Tony Preckwinkle, the boss of the Cook County Democrats and chairman of the, or president of the Cook County Board, and Tim Evans, chief judge of Cook County, whose budget relies on Tony Preckwinkle, just like Kim Fox does, why aren't they held to account for some of the violence given the revolving door of releasing thugs, criminals, violent people like murderers, suspected murderers and suspected rapists and suspected shooters out of the Cook County Jail and back into their neighborhoods? Why aren't they being held account when you see Kim Fox say, we're not going to lock up protesters? And then you see what looked like the Alamo over the last weekend in Grant Park with like 50 cops fighting off hundreds, if not, you know, more of protesters throwing bottles at them and urine and everything else. Why isn't Kim Fox in the conversation, Tom?
Well, because you don't have an opposite. You don't have a Republican. You don't have an independent Democrat. Yes, I know there are candidates on the ballot. Nobody's articulating those issues, and nobody's, you know, calling her on those issues. You have few people, you know, in the media today that are addressing those issues, you know, in a comprehensive way. You know, the justice system, if you take a look at the recent Supreme Court session, it was really an unusual session. It was full of heavy weighted decisions, and, you know, to the right, to the left, and to the middle. But they grappled with those issues, and they made some decisions, whether you agree with them or not. Here locally, we don't do that. In fact, we don't even know when there's going to be another jury trial in Cook County because of the COVID-19 issue. I think there's a responsibility, you know, for, you know, we have three branches of government, the executive, legislative, and judicial. The legislative branch in Illinois, we know, hasn't done the job. The judicial branch in Illinois is kind of follows suit. And now they're not even getting deeper into the issues currently today. When we have all this unrest, the judicial branch ought to be going in there and applying the law and applying the structure of the law and giving people the opportunity to be heard. Justice delayed is justice denied. And I, you know, whether or not if people can fly airplanes, if they can open up stores and they can open up liquor stores, we ought to be able to provide jury trials in a timely way for those folks and to give Kim Fox and everybody else the argument that there's no reason to worry about this. We're going to have justice soon because they're going to have their trial set. There are ways to do that. I mean, you know, 26 and Cal and how they arraign people on camera and everything. There's ways of getting the job done. But the will is not there. That's the problem. The leadership, the will is not there.
Because they're woke. Because right. they're woke and or they're afraid. The fact is the Democrats used to be a moderate party in Chicago. And now they're not. And the people who control the messaging are woke warriors. And others don't want to take that chance and lose their spot because they'll be denounced.
But most folks who were part of, movements, et cetera, in the last 150 years in this country also knew you needed resources to be effective. You needed money. You needed to cultivate those individuals with those resources to be successful. Here in Illinois, it seems to be, you know, we don't seem to understand that people are leaving the state with resources. I spoke to a friend, you know, about 5-6 weeks ago, and he said, Tom, all I need to do is push a few buttons. I can move $500 million into Indiana or California now. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, it's that easy. It's no longer bricks and mortars. People are leaving the state and taking resources and jobs with them. And one of the largest real estate companies in the world told me a year ago they stopped investing in Chicago 18 months ago. There's no vision, and you need resources. So to help save themselves and their movements, they have to save the economy. And there's that disconnect there. And I don't know where that ignorance comes from.
You know who's not ignorant, Tom Serafin and Jeff Carlin and everybody out there? The one who's not ignorant is named Jim Schellinger. You ever hear of him? I'm talking to him in a few hours, maybe for a column later. He's the Secretary of Commerce for the state of Indiana, okay? And you know what he does every day? Meets with companies from Illinois, companies from Cook County, companies from Chicago. And they're all streaming out there, or probably his counterpart in Wisconsin. People, the jobs are fleeing because of this thing that Tom Serafin is talking about. There's no counterbalancing going on. And they're just, you know what? They're just going, Tom.
Right. I know. I have a ex-client, tremendous gentleman. He's got 61 employees, just moved out of Lake County across the border to Kenosha. He was received with open arms from the city and from the state. They helped him build his new warehouse. He's got 61 employees there. They moved freight in and out. Those jobs are now, and all those employees went with him across the border. Those jobs are now Wisconsin jobs, Wisconsin taxpayers, and Wisconsin folks. This is not a drip, drip, drip anymore. It's becoming, you know, the nozzles open, almost open wide. And this next 18 months in Illinois is going to be, it's going to be the telling story, you know. And for all we say about, and people say about Mike Madigan, he was, and continues to be, you know, a weight where people could talk to, somebody who had some idea and understanding. I mean, he did what he did with his law firm, et cetera, but he was also somebody who would be reasoned at the table, could bring people together and say, you're not going to get this, you're not going to get that. This is what we will do, where everybody will share and we'll move forward. I mean, he did that for a very long time on some very difficult issues. And there's no one here today in Illinois that can pick up that mantle and do that. So exactly. When you have everybody scrambling, you're going to have a lot of people fall through the crack, unfortunately, in issues.
Mike Madigan is the hardest working, most disciplined political figure I have ever met in my life. I remember having that famous Apple lunch with him where he just chewed those apples of his and stared at me with those big eyes of his. It demonstrating control to a very young reporter. And now he can see what's coming in front of him, and he can see the valley of ashes that Illinois is becoming.
Yeah, and he also, for people in his neighborhood and in his ward, all politics is local. And he took care of those folks when a family would call him, and their daughter was graduating from a college and needed an internship. It was the speaker that got on the telephone and called around to a variety of offices and said, do you have any room for a potential intern that could do a decent job for you? And that was the extent of that conversation. And eventually that individual got an opportunity to get a job somewhere, stay in Illinois. He went to Loyola, you know, and went to Notre Dame. So his loyalty is to his neighborhood, and everything grew out of there. He never disrespected the people that voted for him. And I think that's a quality really that a lot of people, you know, haven't well learned in this business.
I agree. And also he's not a hypocrite. Right. For all that I've said about him, and I have, I've probably been the one person in the state who's beaten him up more than anybody else. But there's no hypocrite. There's nothing hypocritic about it, unlike Commodius Maximus and his toilets. Tom,
Thanks for joining. Tom Serafin, my friend, my very good personal friend, and boss of Serafin and Associates, longtime journalist, political consultant, and boss of his own firm, and also the host of the Crisis. What is it? The Crisis.
It's called the Crisis Cast. It's a
podcast. Crisis Cast.
It talks about people that find themselves in a crisis situation in all different walks of life, business and politics, and how are they handling that today in the middle of the recession, the COVID-19, and the civil disorder on the streets. How are we acclimating ourselves? How are we surviving? How are we surviving this time so we can see some prosperous time down the road? It's a difficult vision for a lot of folks right now.
Thanks for joining us, Tom Serafin, on the Chicago Way. Thanks,
God bless you guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Good to talk to you, Jeff. Take care.
You too.
So, Jeff, what did you think of Tom's analysis?
I mean, it's stark, and Tom pulls no punches, which is, I do love about Tom. And I think to what you guys were talking about, too, about what's happening here and what's going to happen here. I feel like the politicians in this state are they work in a Band-Aid factory, and the state's triaging out here, or bleeding out as a state, and they're just coming up with Band-Aids. And they're all political, and everything's political, and nothing changes. I mean, nothing ever changes, it seems like. And to Tom's point, what frightens me about where we go from here, especially if there's a void created by the dismissal or resigning of Madigan, is the state's becoming just super, super progressive. And the conservative side of things is so powerless, it seems, that there's nothing to stay in that way of that. And the state doesn't have the money to be like progressive to that degree. It's just blows my mind. And like you said, if they get that money, they're going to have to lower that threshold for who's elitist and who's rich and who's wealthy. When you throw out that number, 50,000, I mean, that's nothing. That's, you can't barely make 50,000 live within Chicago proper and rent. I mean, forget about buying.
Right. But they're going to go down there. That's what they're going to do. That's what this is about. Pritzker wants to break that, get that referendum through and break the wall. And then all the Democrats, and I have to say the Republican enablers, because if it wasn't for the corporate Republican combine, this probably wouldn't be happening. But conservatives didn't get, I mean, the combine, the Bill Cellinis and Bob Shalanders and Jim Thompsons and Jim Edgars, they fought against conservatives. They didn't want conservatives here. And now look at what happens. Look at what we're seeing. A valley of ashes.
Yeah, absolutely.
For Tom Serafin, Serafin Associates, my friend and host of the Crisis Cast podcast. For Jeff Carlin, executive producer of the Rokan Show on WGN, and my friend too. I've got two friends on today. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, syndicated columnist at the Chicago Tribune, member of its editorial board, the eyes of Mike Madigan, the all-seeing eyes staring out into the Valley of Ashes. Thanks for being here on another edition of the Chicago Way on WGN+.